There's a plastic bag floating in the ocean, floating in the ocean. And what are we to do? There's a plastic bag floating in the ocean, floating in the ocean blue. And if the plastic bag starts breaking into pieces, breaking into pieces, what are we to do? And if the plastic bag starts breaking into pieces in the ocean blue.
Welcome to Sustainability Now. I'm your host, Ronnie Lipschitz, and during this semi-weekly radio show, I'll be taking you on a tour of environment, ecology, sustainability, and society through interviews and discussions with academics, activists, advocates, agency staff, and maybe even artists about what they're up to. Our focus will be primarily on the Monterey Bay region, but sometimes we'll range as far afield as California and beyond. Today, my guest is Liz McDade, who runs the No Trace Shop, an online business dedicated to providing customers with a sustainable lifestyle. We'll be talking about what she is up to and zero waste living, as well as discussing consumer culture in the United States and what you can do to change it. We're also going to delve into some of the philosophical and political questions related to the idea and practice of zero waste. And I do also want to add that Liz has a PhD in clinical psychology from the University of Iowa, although she's full-time dedicated to her business at this point. So why don't we get started? Tell us a little bit about yourself and your shop and how you came to do it.
Thank you so much for having me, Ronnie. It's great to be here. So I have always considered myself an environmentalist. And a few years ago, I learned about the zero waste movement. And it felt like a very inspiring movement to me. It felt like a refreshing and sort of tangible way to continue to think about environmental issues. And it brought sort of new energy to my own environmental issues. And so I started on this journey to cut my waste and my family's waste a few years ago. And in the process, I realized that there were certain tools that I needed to help us cut waste as a family. And when I was looking around for these tools, I found that some of them weren't that sustainable. So some of the things that you could purchase were actually made from plastic or packaged in plastic, or maybe they were painted with a material that was essentially a form of plastic or had some other kinds of toxic chemicals. So I was looking around at the landscape of kinds of supplies that I wanted for my home, and I realized that there weren't really options that I considered zero waste in terms of helping me go towards zero waste. So I started to make them myself, and I realized that this is something that folks need if they want to reduce their own waste.
Okay, let's go ahead. All right. So what is it that you sell via No Trace?
I make cloth veggie bags. So instead of shopping with a plastic bag, you can shop with a cloth bag. And I make beeswax and vegan wax kitchen wraps. So these are alternatives to plastic bags. I also make sandwich and snack bags out of organic cotton and lunch bags and other kinds of bags. So basically I make plastic-free alternatives to the bags that you might need in your kitchen and your home.
How did you decide that that's what needed to be done? Is that just based on
Was the first spot in my own home where I wanted to start cutting out plastic was in the kitchen. And that's where I first started looking into other options for myself. So I decided, let's start with kitchen bags and kitchen related products.
Mm-hmm. Who makes these things?
So I make pretty much everything.
Wow.
I do have someone helping me because the demand has really grown and I can't keep up on my own. So I have someone who can help me with what I'm making, but everything is made here in Santa Cruz.
Switch. We had a little glitch there. So, okay. And I was wondering whether you use new or recycled materials in making these your products.
That's a good question. Yeah, I thought a lot about that when I was sort of putting together my products, I actually use both. So for some of my products, I use recycled cotton. Mm-hmm. And for other products, I use organic cotton. Mm-hmm. So it's a blend of organic and recycled cotton.
And where do you get the recycled the organic cotton? I mean, who do you buy it from? Have you,
I get the organic cotton from two different companies that are GOTS certified. Uh-huh. So that's a certification that has to do with, you know, where the how the cotton is created and the worker conditions, things like mm-hmm. that. So two different companies provide that for me, and then the recycled cotton I get from a few different places. There's an organization out of New York called Fab Scrap that recycles fabric from the New York Fashion District, and then they redistribute it to makers. So I get cotton from them. I also get it. People know that I use old cotton sheets. So people will bring me sheets that are worn, that maybe they have like a tear and they can't really use them anymore. And then I also get fabric from local thrift stores.
Could someone send you an old t-shirt and have you make something out of it, or has that happened?
I haven't gotten to that point where I can do that. Yeah. But I do have on my website, on my blog, I do have a one of my posts is all about how to keep your textiles out of the landfill. So if you did have an old t-shirt and you couldn't really donate it, you can go to my site for some ideas about how to upcycle materials that you can't really use anymore.
Let's come back to that in a minute, because I think, you know, that's kind of interesting. So you said business is good. How is it?
So I started this journey towards zero waste a few years ago. And then when I was halfway or a few months into that, I started No Trace. And over this year, actually, it's grown to the point where I'm doing it full time now. So I'm No Trace is available for sale in all of the New Leafs in Santa Cruz County. And it's also available at Eco Goods downtown and the Zero Shop in Capitola, the National Marine Sanctuary Exploration Center, Green Space on the west side, a lot of stores around town. And then I'm selling at the local farmers market. So I'm at Live Oak Farmers Market, Westside Farmers Market. And then I'm in stores outside of California. And then I've also been doing some partnerships with other local businesses. So you can get my wraps at Gail's Bakery in Capitola. We developed a product together. And I've developed a product with a Bay Area artist who wanted to offer a sustainable alternative for some really beautiful trays that she makes. So I've started to also do these partnerships, and things have just gotten really busy for me.
Dare I ask, are you making money off of this?
especially,
you know, given the sort of imputed labor costs. Yeah. I'm curious about that.
Yes. Yeah, so I am contributing money to the family at this point. I'm not, you know, I still feel like I have a ways to grow, but I'm definitely, definitely.
But you're not paying yourself a wage then?
Well,
or are you?
I guess I am paying myself a wage in a sense. Yeah.
The reason I ask, and this is sort of completely off topic,
okay,
is that I'm also working in the area of urban agriculture.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that my colleagues have observed is that most urban agriculture is free labor, based on free labor. And, you know, if you started to try and calculate the sort of the shadow costs of a pepper or a tomato, you know, it would look very different.
Right.
Right. And so that's why I'm asking, because I'm curious about how you think about that.
Right. Yeah. It's a really important question. And I think about those costs a lot because one of my products is a cloth veggie bag, mm-hmm. and other companies have those made overseas. And so in the cost, when you purchase something from me, you're actually paying someone in Santa Cruz a livable wage, mm-hmm. to create that product. Uh-huh. And so that is factored into the cost of the products that I sell. And I can't compete. I always tell folks, like, I can't compete with something that's made in India where someone's making like pennies. But this is made, you know, it's made in a sustainable way. It's made here in town. It's made, you know, my veggie bags are made with recycled materials. So I hope that people can appreciate some of those values.
Well, one of my questions was, who's the competition? You know, is anyone else, first of all, offering anything like what you're doing?
Yes. Well, yes and no. So there are companies that make things similar to the way I make them. But there are some things that are really unique about what I'm offering. So, for example, my veggie bags are made with a compostable paint that I actually make myself.
Oh, wow.
So they have a stamp. Each one has is hand stamped with a paint that's not going to leave any kind of toxic residue behind at the end of its life when it's in your compost bin. So it's fully natural in that sense. And that's something that's really unique to my bags. One of my other very popular products is my beeswax wraps.
I wanted to ask about that.
Yeah. So there are a couple other really big companies. One of them is in Vermont and the other, I believe, is in Oregon. And they also make wax wraps. One of the things that's really unique about mine is that I tend to have really fun and colorful prints for people to choose from. I try to have fun, like ocean animals and just prints that people connect with and they see, and they something that you kind of want to have in your fridge. And people also like to give it away as a gift.
Uh-huh.
So it feels special.
How did you figure out how to use the beeswax? Or is this an old practice?
Yeah, it's interesting. There are some recipes that you can find online. And it took me about a year of testing and fine tuning my own recipe to get the wrap to really stick and form around whatever it is you're wrapping up. So it was a lot of trial and error and experimenting with different ratios before I figured out a blend that works really nice.
Mm-hmm.
So it's my own blend, and it took a while to develop it.
Is it only on the inside or is it on the whole?
No,
the whole...
So it's like you take a piece of fabric
and
you infuse it. So I essentially paint onto it my own blend of beeswax, pine sap, coconut, and jojoba oil.
Huh. Yeah.
I'm actually giving a workshop, if anybody out there is interested, a week from today at the Zero Shop in Capitola, how to make your own wax wraps. And when I last checked, there was one spot left. So if people are interested in learning, they can sign up for that workshop. I'll be doing other workshops in the future, but I'll be walking people through how to make their own, you're basically painting the blend into the fabric, or you can kind of iron it into the fabric.
You're not worried about teaching yourself out of a business?
No, I'm not worried about that.
Yeah. So I'm also a sucker for numbers. And I was wondering if you've tried to calculate the payback time on these items. I did a calculation this morning, but I was wondering, how long would you have to use, let's just say, a sandwich bag in order to basically make up the cost of plastic sandwich bags?
Yes. Okay. So I want to answer this question in a couple ways.
Okay.
So someone actually did this. So I collaborated with a woman named Polly Barks, who has a blog that's all about sustainability and zero waste living. So she actually did this. But before I answer it directly, I always remind people that the price that you're paying at the cash register is just one small piece of the price. And cheaper things are not always better. So you're going to be paying the price for cheaper things in other ways. So we pay that price in ocean cleanups and waste management. You know, possible health impacts of exposure to chemicals from plastics, the cost to marine wildlife of the plastic pollution problem. So there's a lot of hidden costs for some of these cheaper products that you avoid when you spend a little bit more upfront. But in terms of the actual, how many times do you have to use it? You definitely would have to use my products many, many times to get, sort of cover that cost difference up front at the cash register. But I also like to tell people, think of it as you're investing in the planet. You're not just, getting something for your kitchen, but you're putting your money towards the planet versus towards plastic.
To take a break. So you're listening to KSQD in Santa Cruz at 90.7 FM. And KSQD.org online. California is burning. And KSQD is presenting a five-part series on the growing threat of wildfires. California Burning takes a critical look at how the state's fire-prone forests have been managed and examines how we can all be better stewards of the land and avoid catastrophic wildfires in the future. The series is produced by North State Public Radio, and it's airing on Monday evening at 6 p.m. right after Talk of the Bay here on KSQD 97.90.7, get that one right, FM, and KSQD.org. You're listening to Sustainability Now. This is Ronnie Lipschitz, and my guest today is Liz McDade, who runs a No Trace Shop, an online business dedicated to providing customers with a sustainable lifestyle. Well, I just wanted to let you know, I did a calculation, making various assumptions, and decided that the simple payback period is somewhere between 175 and 260 days. So it's roughly a school year.
Okay.
But as you point out, there are lots of costs that don't get incorporated, what economists call externalities.
Ah.
And if we were able to figure out what those costs were and put them on the price of disposable goods, they would probably be a great deal more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good thing to remind people of. And unfortunately, right, what they feel, what the impact is just what they pay at Target or online at Amazon. So that's something that we need to do. We need to take care of.
Yes. And I appreciate that the costs can feel like a burden to some people. And I try to offer tutorials. So, for example, the wax wrap workshop, and I have some online tutorials so people can try to DIY some of these things on their own.
Okay. So how big of an impact do you think you can make on the waste stream with not just the business, but with this particular approach?
I think it has a lot of potential. I think what I see, and I talk to people, I'm at the farmers markets a lot. So I talk to people about these products and about their efforts all the time. And often what I see happening is that it starts with one thing. Like, let's say they get one veggie bag, and most people, it starts to pick up speed and sort of snowball in their own life. So just taking that one small step towards less waste can lead a single person to really cut back their waste in a lot of different areas, and help them be more aware of what's happening and remember to refuse a straw, for example, remember to bring their own coffee cup to the store. So I really think that even taking just one small step can lead to a lot more steps and can really start to add up and can lead to some big changes. And we're seeing that already. I mean, places are banning plastic bags and plastic straws. And so these actions are accumulating into bigger legislation, I think, across the state and other states, not just here, in other countries.
Yeah, well, not to be a downer, I was in a class a couple of weeks ago talking about the putting a fee on shopping bags in Santa Cruz and how well that seemed to be working. And a very bright student spoke up and pointed out that we used to use paper bags for garbage. And now we buy plastic bags to put our garbage in. And do we know what the change has been?
Right.
And I had to say, I never even thought about that one. Yeah. I still don't know quite how to think about it.
Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, a well-intentioned initiative produces its own externalities.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just wanted to mention that. Well, you know, I want to pursue some of these more philosophical questions because this is stuff that I teach and talk about in classes all the time. So the first thing is that on your website, you're offering zero waste shopping. And I'm wondering if that's not a contradiction in terms, and maybe you could reflect on that.
Yes, absolutely. Well, on my site, I talk a lot about zero waste shopping, specifically at the grocery store. And I think everyone needs food, right? So my goal is to help people shop for food in a way that leads to less packaging waste and less plastic waste. So that's what I mean when I talk about zero waste shopping. But there are folks, so if you think about people who are working on cutting their waste along a spectrum. There are folks on one extreme who are absolute minimalists and will go without, you know, they don't use shampoo. They, you know, they're just not buying anything except absolute necessities. So that's one end. And then other folks who might go on a shopping spree and get every possible reusable option that they can. So I think it's great if folks can find a happy medium in terms of, you know, getting what they need and finding a sustainable, reusable alternative, not going bananas, not going overboard and getting everything that they things that they don't actually need. But I think that there's definitely a role for some of these products that can help eliminate disposable options.
Yeah. Of course, we live in a consumer society that prioritizes obsolescence and throwing things out and buying new things, which makes it really, really difficult to push in that particular direction.
Right.
And so, you know, what I'm always wondering about is what we can do on a larger scale to push in that direction. It's not just a matter of talking about it. I mean, what you're doing, of course, is a step in that direction. But again, it's a small step.
Right.
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 And it would be great if this were available to everyone and it were convenient.
Mm-hmm.
Right. As to me, the real key is, can you make changes relatively painless?
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise people are probably not going to make those changes.
Right. And I think it, like I said, I think it starts with a small step. So what is one small step? What is one small inconvenience that a person is willing to take? Because this is something I've said before, convenience is killing the planet. Like, people have to wake up and realize that if we want to continue to live with this convenience all around us, it's going to destroy us, and it's going to, you know, continue to fill our oceans with pollution and clog our rivers and our streams and our forests and our meadows. So I do think that folks need to be able to do one small thing that's outside of their norm, that's, you know, a step in a different direction, and it's, you know, one small inconvenience could lead to taking bigger steps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, this throwaway culture, it's convenient up front. It's easy. You don't have to think ahead. You don't have to bring along, you know, utensils or a to-go container. You can just grab a bag of chips at the gas station. That convenience, I totally get it. But if we don't stand up to a little bit of that convenience, we're not gonna dig ourselves out of this trash, you know, hill that we've created. So I think people need to accept that. That's a really important first step, that there's gonna be some inconvenience if you want to make a change in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I see this all, a lot of this is about socialization, right?
Yeah.
You're a clinical psychologist, presumably, psychologist.
Yeah.
Presumably, you had to learn about this stuff, right? You know, that all of these sort of formative practices that we learn at a very young age,
right,
or get socialized into as we get older. And it's very difficult to change something that you regard as normal or even natural.
Right.
And in this society, it seems natural to buy and consume. Of course, we don't ask for the impossible to open packaging that everything comes in.
Right.
But we still buy this stuff.
Yes.
And so and I can see how, you know, you're talking about people making small changes and eventually they make bigger changes.
Right.
But in a way what they're doing isn't normal or naturalized, right? They're making a move which is sort of counter to the mainstream. And so I always am asking myself, well, what can we do or what can be done that would normalize the alternative practices?
Right. Yeah.
And that's a tricky one.
Right.
I mean, I can go on at a great length about it. I won't do that. My one of my examples is the fact that when I moved to California 40 years ago, nobody carried water bottles.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so the question is always, how did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, it's a hard one to study, and it's a really interesting.
Yeah, but it's problem. Possible, right? You see that it's possible.
Well, it's possible, right? But there's no sort of intentionality. That's mm-hmm. to me, that's the key thing, right? Is that mm-hmm. is there a way to do this, which doesn't take 40 years or whatever the time yeah. period is, to kind of permeate society and become normal practice,
right?
And that's there are all kinds of ideas about that, some of them not so attractive.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I see it, I'm in a bit of a zero waste, you know, world personally. So I definitely see the impact that role models can have. So there's people that I look up to that have been doing this zero waste lifestyle for longer, and they've really inspire others, and they do help to normalize the things that zero waste living asks of you to do. So, you know, if you see somebody that you really admire putting bread into an old pillowcase, or, you know, bringing their own coffee cup, I think that those role models can make a big difference, and they can really inspire people. But yeah, I think it can be hard. So here in Santa Cruz, you know, we're really lucky. We have a lot of great grocery stores that, in terms of grocery shopping, that support bringing your own containers. But I talk to people all the time that are in different areas, and they feel really uncomfortable when they go shopping and they have these jars and they have their own bags, and they feel like the cashiers don't want them doing that, or some stores will straight up tell them, we don't want you bringing reusable bags. You must use a clean plastic fresh bag. And so I think, yeah, that socialization part is really important to make it normal to do this. And Santa Cruz is definitely, I think, doing a good job of that at a lot of our stores, like Staff of Life and New Leaf and Wild Roots. These stores are supportive.
So, I mean, the ideal thing, well, I don't want to talk about franchises, but I mean, the ideal thing from the perspective of what you're doing is to have people all over the country start businesses like yours for,
absolutely.
You know, their communities.
Yeah, I think that would be great. Yeah, I mean, I think that I don't see other businesses doing what I'm doing as competition, because everyone does things in their own way and are serving their own community. And I'm here to serve this community. And, you know, I think of myself as serving the greater California community. But I think that there's space for a lot of makers across the country who might want to do something like this to serve their own community. I think that would be amazing.
Have you done anything like a webinar or a you know, podcast, instructional podcast or something like that?
I have not. I've done some other interviews talking about, you know, what I'm doing and zero waste living, but I haven't done any sort of...
You haven't tried to do anything like that. Okay. Mm-hmm. You're listening to KSQD 90.7 FM in Santa Cruz and KSQD.org. And this is Sustainability Now. KSQD thanks the many listeners who donated during our recent pledge drive. Your generosity helped us raise $16,000 towards our $25,000 goal before we were interrupted by the power shutoff. Boo! So, we're asking you to please help us reach our goal. You can donate now at our website, ksqd.org, and we're going to have another fundraising period towards the end of November. So you'll be able to listen and call in then. More information about that will be forthcoming. And remember that Community Radio KSQD is listener-supported. We receive no government, institutional, or corporate funding. KSQD relies on listeners like you to make possible the wide variety of unique and quality programs you hear on KSQD. So please make your secure, tax-deductible donation now at ksqd.org by clicking on the banner at the top of our homepage. That's KSQD.org. Thanks. So this is Ronnie Lipschitz, and you're listening to Sustainability Now, and I'm speaking with Liz McDade, who runs the No Trace Shop, an online business dedicated to providing customers with a sustainable lifestyle. We've been talking about the business, and now we're getting into sort of more philosophical and abstract questions, ones that trouble me as I teach and write. I saw you posted on your website 50 small ways to fight climate change. Mm-hmm. I kind of have in my mind some kind of book that came out like that about 10 or 20 years ago.
Oh.
I better read that. Yeah. And I'm not sure it was about climate change. That's the thing. I don't remember what it was about, but it was like, you know, 100 things you can do or something like that.
Okay.
So anyhow, can you talk to me about that?
Yeah.
What motivated you to do that?
Yeah. So part of my business is to also provide information for folks who are interested in reducing their waste. And so I have a blog. It's at notraceshop.com/blog. And I try to write about things that I know people care about. People who care about zero waste care about climate change. So I think the only reason to care about zero waste is because you care for the planet. You consider yourself an environmentalist. And climate change is the single greatest threat facing our planet right now. So I felt like that would be an important topic to talk about with my readers. And to me, it can be overwhelming. What in the world can we do about climate change as an individual? And so I thought it would be useful to other people like me to break it down and think about all of the small steps that you can do that can make a difference. And so I go through in that post, I talk about, you know, transportation emissions, but then I also talk about, you know, you can write a letter to your governor, you can write a letter to your representative, and I have links like, here's how you find who that person is, here's where you go to find what you want to ask for. These are the organizations that are rallying us around climate change who have the information about what it is we need to demand from the government. But then also things that you can do on your own to reduce your own carbon footprint. So yeah, it's just a collection of things that anyone can do, at least some of those small steps to reduce their own carbon footprint and try to make a difference in climate change.
Maybe you should provide a checklist for people to print out, you know,
they
could keep a journal or a record or something.
That's
like that.
That's a great idea.
I'm thinking about, so how do you mobilize people politically around these sorts of issues?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I just had a vision of a caravan to Sacramento with people carrying garbage bags of unrecyclable plastic, you know, dump those on the steps of the of the Capitol.
Yeah, I mean,
that might be a great idea.
There's so many things. That's one idea. I think there's so many ways you can try to make a difference. I think the marches that happened this September were great, and that was really what triggered me to sort of keep the momentum going. So I went to the march. My family, we all went to the march, and it was really inspiring. And so I felt like, let's keep this momentum going. What can you do even after the march is over? Because there's a lot that we can do to make our views known and to get other people involved, to build community, and to, you know, change things at your home, things like that. So
it's difficult to sustain a commitment like that. I mean, you know, we're looking at other countries where people are in the streets, Hong Kong and Chile and where else? Iraq. Well, that one's not such a great story. Mm-hmm. But, you know, all over the world, you see these mass movements.
Mm-hmm.
And we have trouble sustaining that kind of interest and commitment, don't we?
Yeah.
And it's hard to sort of imagine doing this week after week.
Right.
Right. And doing it in places that where it might have an impact. And that seems to me to be something we ought to be thinking about.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we have to keep trying and keep talking about this. I think a lot of people are continuing to act. I think for some people, maybe the climate march was what they were going to do for the year. But I think a lot of people are going to continue to act and try to keep forward movement.
So let's see, what do I ask you next? Right. So let's go back to this thing about, you know, living in a consumer society and being encouraged to shop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the things, and you raised the, you know, some role models and things like that. Obviously one of the things that people could start to do is shop less and reuse things more.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty difficult, as you pointed out, to find products that are reusable and long lasting.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there are all kinds of implications from that. If people started to reuse things longer periods of time, mm-hmm. right? Production of those things would presumably decline. Mm-hmm. It would have all kinds of knockoff effects in the economy. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not saying, well, this is a terrible thing. I'm just sort of, you know, raising this question. And yet,
right.
how do you, you know, how do you motivate people? And I'm sort of beating on that particular one because, of course, it's of great interest to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, have you thought about that at all?
I have. Yeah. So, for example, I think about the fashion industry and, you know, this whole fast fashion world that where clothes are being produced at an astronomical rate for people to buy. There's new clothes being put out at the store every day at some of these fast fashion chains like Forever 21. And
well, Forever 21 has gone belly up, so
they're still around.
They
declared bankruptcy.
Oh.
But they are still in business.
Kind of like PG&E, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So they are shutting some stores. I was very curious. It's like, oh, are they gone? Is this it for Forever 21? They declared bankruptcy. They are still in business.
It was just that. Okay.
They are closing some stores, but they're not gone. Yeah. So stores like that are still around. They're still going to keep cranking out clothes, new clothes that go on the floor every day to encourage this shopping frenzy, right? Mm-hmm. And I see a huge problem with that. And I think, you know, there's people like me and other businesses like me who are making things in a more thoughtful and sustainable way. And what I would like to see is, you know, fewer businesses who are just cranking out cheap products and getting them on the shelves every day. And more businesses like mine that are making things very thoughtfully. And maybe it costs a little bit more because it's going to last you a very long time. And maybe people buy less and they just buy quality items that they know are going to last them for a while instead of buying a new t-shirt every week, because it's cheap. So I think that businesses who care about the environment want to encourage people to just get quality that they need rather than constantly shopping for the next greatest thing.
Yeah, of course, those businesses operate by having the clothing produced abroad, right, where the wages are much, much lower.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure whether the tariffs are having much impact on that. But it's interesting, again, to note that 50, 60 years ago, clothing was very expensive.
Right.
And people wore things for a long time because of that. And one of the things that happened was by shifting production offshore, things became very cheap. And relatively speaking, clothing is very cheap. But it also has this other impact in terms of incomes and standards of living, right? If it basically suppresses growth in wages, because if you can maintain the same standard of living because stuff is cheaper,
mm-hmm.
right? The argument is, well, you don't have to get pay raises as often. And so there's a whole sort of interesting connection there. So,
right.
you know, encouraging the sort of rapid turnover
right.
is not just simply a matter of profits,
right.
which it presumably, you know, supports, but also of in terms of wage growth, in terms of what companies have to pay their employees.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this whole sort of, you know, very... Yeah. complicated cycle right. that contributes to that.
Right.
Yeah. But the fashion industry isn't, you know, it escapes me because I'm a slob. I wear the same clothes well, I have a College 8 t-shirt on. And as some of you know, College 8 has been Rachel Carson College now for 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a collector's item. It's
right.
kind of like, you know, Grateful Dead t-shirt from 40, 50 years ago.
Well, I always encourage people that shop secondhand before they go to the store for new stuff. That's like the greenest way to shop is shop secondhand before getting new clothes somewhere.
But people mostly throw their stuff out, don't they?
Are there
old clothing?
I mean, the thrift stores are pretty full.
They're pretty full.
pretty full yeah. of clothes around town. There's a lot of stuff that you can get at Goodwill or, you know, thrift center or wherever you like to go around town.
What do you have? What are your visions for the future then for all of this?
Well, I'm going to continue doing what I'm doing and expanding to more and more stores. And I really also love offering workshops. So, like I mentioned, I'm doing a workshop coming up, and my goal is to keep offering workshops in the community to help people learn how to make some of their own sustainable, reusable supplies. And then continue to grow my team and have folks who are part of No Trace family and have a thriving Santa Cruz business.
You're looking to grow. Mm-hmm. How big?
I don't have a specific goal in mind. I don't exactly know. Yeah.
You'd have to hire more people to come in and do these things, right?
Right.
You'd have to become a capitalist.
I guess so.
I guess so. Well, yeah. Actually, earlier...
A capitalist with a heart, though.
Well, I suppose, if you offer people shares in the company or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Worker-owned. Well, we won't talk about that. You mentioned earlier when we were talking that you've gone and talked to school kids about this, your company and your work.
I have.
Maybe we can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Yeah, so I have two kids, my daughters Hazel and Beatrice. They might be listening right now. And I've gone to each of their classrooms to talk about trash and plastic pollution and to get the kids excited about why trash matters and what they can do to cut their own trash. And just to get them thinking, I think, when people are young, that's a great time to introduce new ideas to them and to socialize them, like you were saying, into some more sustainable practices in their own life. So bringing their own water bottle to school, bringing reusable cutlery in their lunch, using a little cloth napkin or a little rag instead of paper napkins. So I think a lot of these ideas are really simple and kids totally get it. And they, if you can, I try to walk them through our trash problem here in the U.S., how much trash, each person makes like 4.5 pounds of trash a day here in the U.S.
Is that personal or is that sort of on average for the country?
That's personal trash.
Personal, wow.
On average, personal trash per person.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so we talk about that and we talk about, the great plastic patches in the ocean and where all that's coming from kids get it. And then we talk about microplastics. They get that too. As plastic breaks down, it gets in the food chain and then it gets into us. So I think, I really actually enjoy that, talking to kids about this and getting them excited about it. There's a couple of really great videos on YouTube that kind of walk kids through the problem with plastic and how it breaks down and contributes to greenhouse gas emissions.
Is that something you want to do more frequently?
Yeah,
to school?
As my schedule allows, I love going to schools. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll take the break.
Release the Kraken!
It's a chilling taste of the true Kraken's power. If these smaller squid deal this much damage, squid 6 times bigger or more would be nearly unstoppable.
Fish that can wrap tentacles around you.
When they approach a prey, all the tentacles come together in a cone with the 2 feeding tentacles inside.
Hey, squid.
They are one of the fastest growing animals in the ocean.
And in a way, I think the squid is probably an organism that's ideally suited to climate change.
There's squid all over, there's ink all over, there's people dodging squid.
Look at all the ink it's squirting into the water!
A little music could soothe their hunger.
K-Squid, Santa Cruz Community Radio.
Join me for State of Mind, Being Human and Living Well, conversations about mental health and wellness here on the Central Coast. I'm your host, Deborah Sloss, licensed therapist, and I'll be joined by guests sharing their personal stories, their clinical expertise, and resources on a topic. Tune in to State of Mind, the first Sunday of the month, 6 to 7 p.m., right here on KSQD 90.7 FM.
Okay, this is Ronnie Lipschitz. You're listening to Sustainability Now. And my guest today is Liz McDade, who runs the No Trace Shop, an online business dedicated to providing customers with a sustainable lifestyle. We were just talking about kids mm-hmm. in schools and talking to them about trash and what they can do. And you mentioned zero waste parenting, and mm-hmm. I'm sort of curious what that might entail.
Yeah, so this is something that I get asked by other parents, like, how do you do this with kids? And so it's something that I think about, and I talk with my own kids about, and my own partner about, how do we cut waste as a family? And so I have a few different resources on my site and my blog. And I think one of the most important things, if you're trying to get your kids to reduce their waste, is to talk to them about it and to know that, you know, they live in this world that really encourages waste. And so there's going to be waste. There's going to be trash. It's unavoidable for them. So to really be accepting of that, if you're going to let your kids move through the world without mm-hmm. holding their hand 24/7, they're going to come across waste. They're going to be handed something that's really irresistible, or they're going to go places without you where there's trash is created as part of the meal or whatever. So I think that's one thing that that I tell parents is to keep in mind that it's going to happen, and to just accept that. But that if you get your kids inspired about why it matters, you know, kids are amazing, and they can really take these things to heart and really dive in. And my kids have both been amazing at trying to do this and using reusables and sharing with their friends. Yeah.
Do they tell you when you've done something?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. There's smart people. So they're on it.
When you buy them toys, what do you look for?
Oh yeah, that's a good question. And I actually have a post about zero waste gifts for kids. Uh-huh. And one of the things that I encourage is, if you're wanting to give a gift to a child, think about an experience before an actual thing. So, you know, taking them somewhere special, taking them, you know, for an afternoon at the boardwalk as a gift, mm-hmm. or taking
plenty of waste there.
Yeah, maybe bring your own water bottle and snacks if you can. But yeah, I try to encourage experiences over things. But, you know, if there's something really special that they want, and, we talk about these things, but I'm not going to deny them something in particular that they're very excited about if it's made with plastic. But we do talk about what's something that's good to bring into the home versus things that are just going to end up in the landfill. And so, yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm thinking about wooden blocks, which, as I recall, when I was growing up, you know, we're around for 20 years, the same set of blocks.
Yeah.
My son had the little plastic blocks. I'm having a senior moment.
Oh, Legos?
Here. Legos.
Yes.
You know, we still have bins of Legos in the garage, although he hasn't, which he won't let us get rid of.
Yeah.
You know, although he hasn't used them in 15 years. Right. But I was sort of thinking about that. I mean, do you look at things like durability?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think, and we talk about this sometimes, if they're at a birthday party, there might be some party favors that are from the dollar store mm-hmm. that are going to break in 17 hours.
Yeah.
And so I really encourage them, like, how special is this to you? Because I'm pretty sure that's destined for the landfill. I do think toys like Legos that are going to last and that they can really learn from, I think those are great. And, you know, when my kids were younger, they did have some wooden blocks, and there are some nice plastic-free options out there. My kids are getting older where they don't, you know, they're not asking for toys as often anymore. But I think there are some nice options. And then, like I said, if it's a toy that really matters to them, or if it's a toy that they're going to learn a lot from. So Legos are amazing. I mean, you learn so many. My girls love Legos, and it's a great experience for kids. So I would never say don't get Legos because they're made with plastic. But yeah, I do think about some of those just little small dollar store things.
Well, I mean, I'm even thinking about, you know, big expensive things that fall apart, right, after a few months of use, mm-hmm. right? It's not just the little things, it's the right. big things as well.
Yeah.
That, and again, it's hard to imagine, you know, it's been a while since I was a child.
Yeah.
So it's hard to imagine what, you know, how children react in an environment where they're being bombarded so much with, you know, stuff, yeah. not stuff so much, but the appeal of stuff, right? It's in so many places, mm-hmm. and things change so, fashions change so quickly.
Yeah.
Right? It's really hard to sort of imagine that.
Right. I mean, that's the frustrating thing with a lot of these plastic toys is that once they break, you can't fix
it.
You
can't do anything with it.
And that's a major, that's one of the reasons I hate a lot of plastic toys, because when they break, there's nothing you can do with them. There's no way to repair it. So we do try to avoid that, but it's becoming less of an issue for us now. But when they were younger, it was more something that I was thinking about in my mind.
So when you have to go out and buy something major, mm-hmm. what do you do?
Well, it depends on the thing, actually.
Well, we could say furniture, we could say appliances, you know, yeah. these are sort of different things. I'm just wondering,
right.
how do you go about that?
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, buying used is really green for most things. But then if you need like a new fridge, you don't want to get a used fridge. You want to get the most energy efficient fridge that you can. So there's going to be times when you really should get the best option that you can in terms of energy savings. But then, yeah, other things, I try to get used. I try to find things on Craigslist or get them used at a thrift store. And then, but I also try to find a balance, because I can't spend, you know, all day on Craigslist, yeah. or I can't necessarily wait to find something for 6 months. So there's going to be times when, you know, convenience, the convenience of getting something new is going to outweigh the wait to find just what you need.
Yeah, I see opportunities here for anybody out there who's thinking about apps, you know,
a
website for selling and exchanging durable goods.
Or please somebody develop an app where you can tell it, like, this is what I'm on the market for.
Well,
can you
right.
ping me whenever right, somebody right. posts this, because I need that.
Yeah.
I think that would be great.
It gets into some ideas of the sharing economy,
mm-hmm.
But not renting things out. This is not Airbnb or Lyft. This is basically, if you've got something that you don't need, find somebody, give it to somebody who needs it, right?
Right, right.
And is there some place, sort of an exchange where...
Well, there's FreeCycle. Have you heard of FreeCycle?
No, I haven't.
There's FreeCycle.org. And it's pretty active in Santa Cruz, where if you have something that you don't need anymore, it could even be, I've seen someone be like, I got this yogurt and it's a flavor I don't like. Does anybody want this yogurt? So it could be, or it can be like, I have this sofa, or I have an old air conditioner, or, you know, all kinds of things.
Can people post what they're looking for as well?
Yeah,
or is it
can,
just,
yeah, absolutely.
Oh, so this is what,
yeah.
Is what, yeah.
And
so
I've done that before. I've posted, I'm looking for, I forget what I was looking for recently. Oh, I was looking for packing paper, actually, to ship my orders when I have to ship orders. And I found some paper.
Yeah, what do you do?
Paper.
What do you ship them in?
I use paper boxes, paper envelopes, and recycled packing paper for all my shipments. Yeah, I don't ship with any plastic. So.
Okay. What else should we talk about? How is there anything that you wanted to talk about that we haven't addressed so far?
Well, I think the kids issue, I think, is something that people have a lot of questions about. And so I would encourage people to look at my blog. I've got a post about zero waste gifts for kids. I also have a post about how we do our advent calendar, how we do like a zero waste advent calendar.
How do you do that?
So we have each day is, rather than like a little candy wrapped in trash. Yeah, yeah. It's just something like a little special experience, like a walk, a special night walk, you know, this is the day that we're going to decorate our tree. So that's got some fun ideas for families who are trying to go through the holidays with a little less waste and a little less trash. I think, you know, the holidays can be stressful trying to purchase all these things, but I like to remind people it's a time to connect, you know, time to slow down and connect with people. And it's experiences are much better ways to connect rather than giving things.
Yeah. Quality rather than quantity.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. So yeah, I would encourage people if they have kids or little ones in their life to check that out and get some inspiration, some ideas. I've got a few different posts about zero waste with kids.
Well, I mean, you can do that for big ones as well.
Yeah,
for
absolutely.
Adults. It doesn't
for
have to be just for kids.
Yeah, all ages.
Right.
Yeah.
We need to learn to change our habits and practices.
Absolutely.
Well, listen, Liz, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was really interesting. And I sort of want to encourage you to do all of these things, you know, to try and foster businesses like yours all over the country and the like.
But
it would be a lot of work.
Yes.
It would take you away from what you're doing.
One thing at a time, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me.
It was a pleasure.
Great talking with you.
So, let's see. I'll be back in 2 weeks, and my guest on November 17th will be Heidi Carton, who is Executive Director of Common Roots Farm. Common Roots Farm is a really interesting place. It's out on Golf Club Drive off of Highway 9, just past Harvey West. And it is literally a 4 or 8 acre farm out there. But it grows a variety of vegetables, herbs, fruit, and flowers. It offers horticultural and farm skills training, internships to people with developmental disabilities, environmental and gardening education, and micro enterprise opportunities right in the heart of Santa Cruz, California. It's a really interesting place because the people who founded it did it because they have disabled children, and they want those adult children at this point, they want them to be able to go out, you know, and do this kind of stuff, you know, learn about farming. And so Heidi's going to come and talk to us about that. I just want to remind you that you can still donate to K-Squid, even though we missed 3 days of the pledge because of PG&E, boo. You can go to the station by going, give to the station by going to ksqd.org and clicking on the donate button. And finally, if you miss program broadcasts or you want to hear them again, they're archived at tinyurl.com/y4nbrenv. And as always, you can send comments and brickbats to me at ronniel@ksquid.org. So until next time, sustainability now.
There's a plastic bag floating in the ocean, floating in the ocean. And what are we to do? There's a plastic bag floating in the ocean, floating in the ocean blue. And if the plastic bag starts breaking into pieces, what are we to do? And if the plastic bag starts breaking into pieces in the ocean?
I'm joined by guests.